This is Works in Progress, a podcast from the UCLA School of the Arts and Architecture. I'm Sean Arenas. I recently sat down with two of our alumni, Dami Alufo-Oshe and Katie Chu. Dami and Katie met during their grad school orientation at UCLA in 2013 and became fast friends. They were both enrolled in the Master of Architecture program in the UCLA Department of Architecture and Urban Design, AUD for short. They graduated together in 2016. Since then, Dami has become a studio director at Rios, an international design collective. Katie is a principal at Offset Engineering, a full-service structural engineering firm she co-founded with Ben Varela in 2022. In this conversation conducted at Rios, I talked to them about what initially drew them to architecture, what they gained from their time at UCLA, how they have adapted to rapidly evolving technology, and any advice they can provide to aspiring architects.
I took that exam at the end of high school. I don't know if you ever did that, where it's like, find your future. Like, what do you guys, you
know? Like a placement style.
Oh, everyone took one, yeah. And I remember taking it, and at the end it said, you should go into architecture because you like to build things and you like art or something like that. And I remember thinking, like, what is that? Like, never crossed my mind as a field or not even a career.
That's Katie, recalling the first time she considered architecture as a potential career. That fateful high school exam set her on the path she has remained on since.
And that's when I think I got serious about it and started looking into it. But then you start realizing that you were exposed to architecture, you know, every day. You just don't realize it when you're out in the world. But then you start looking at, like, what it entails, buildings and all that, design. And you realize that you're surrounded by it from the beginning, you know. But you weren't aware of it. So it's probably when it first hit me, and like actually architecture as a field was when I got back the results, being like, what is that? Okay.
And so you took it seriously then. You looked into it like, this must mean something.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I was pretty lost as a high school senior.
Dami, on the other hand, moved around a lot as a young person, and his appreciation for architecture didn't really begin until undergrad at Ohio State University.
I would definitely like draw a distinction between architecture and buildings. Like, I remember as a kid growing up, we traveled a bunch. I got to see like a lot of Europe through a lens that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Got to experience a bunch of buildings in a way that I didn't understand. But like experiencing architecture probably didn't happen until I'm going to say like sometime in undergrad, like our first like Euro trip. Because it's one of those things that like I applied for the program. I like did the research of what it is, you know, the business of architecture and what it is. But it's like truly understanding what like the history, the lineage, like to put yourself in a context within architecture, like it's kind of a big deal. And it's like I would equate it to like when your eyes open up for the first time and you start to like actually see things, or like when you get like a new prescription and the clarity is just like, oh, like you've been seeing the world, but now you actually like see.
It's kind of like the intent behind, because you're surrounded by buildings every day, right? But then you start to look at them differently, like, oh, someone chose to do the window like that,
exactly,
you know, or like, oh, they recessed the opening like that, and you're like, oh, there was intent behind all of these decisions.
Yeah.
You don't notice.
Seeing it for beyond like the thing that's on the postcard,
the object,
and seeing like all the component parts
exactly.
of it, really starts
and
to,
understanding it.
Katie, do you remember when that happened for you? When you started to see the deliberateness in architecture, where you're like, this isn't just random.
Yes, well, through an engineering lens actually, because that was my undergrad, and so I was a structural engineer undergrad, and it was all math. And it was just math, numbers, until the end. And I think I was a senior in college. And then you start realizing, like, oh, we're designing something for a larger purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're not just doing, like, math problems for fun. Like, oh, no, this skeleton goes into a building and it creates the form. And I think that's when it really clicked. I was like, oh, and then I pursued architecture graduate.
And to define our terms a bit, when you say the delineation between engineering and architecture, what is that distinction?
I would say that's a good one.
Yeah, it is.
I always describe it as engineering. Structural engineering is the bones of the building. So it's what makes it stand, what makes it withstand other forces like earthquake, you know, wind, snow. But it makes it an actual tangible object, because I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if without engineering, architecture is not, you couldn't build it, right? It's just it's 2D on paper.
100%. Yeah. I mean, I would maybe use terms like proportions of art and science to describe both. Like, I feel like
form and function.
Engineering is like maybe like, and this, I don't know how people will take this, but like it's probably closer to like 90 to 95% science and like 5% art. Obviously, there's ingenuity and stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Whereas architecture, obviously, that fluctuates. But like, I feel like it can be 50-50 split. It can be 75-30. Like, I think it has a lot more range within that spectrum depending on your frame of reference. For me, I've always been a huge fan of the structural bones of the like starting a design from the structure seems to make the most amount of sense to me, and that's right. Where you can have so much ingenuity. It's like, oh, if we solve the problem structurally, then the building doesn't have to do as much work, you know.
Form and function kept coming up during our conversation. Form often refers to the aesthetic or geometric aspects of a building. Function is the measurable practicality and usability of the created space. I asked them both how they see this relationship.
For a long time, it was sort of viewed in that binary case of like form and function or form or function, whereas like increasingly it just doesn't make sense. Like you can't have one without the other, I feel like. And I think to focus all on the function without having the form sort of negates the art aspect of it, whereas the opposite, like, you know, like what are you doing? You're just going to be like, you know, crumpling up a piece of paper and throwing it on the table and saying that that's architecture. So it's just, I feel like the two are separately linked and
Yeah, you have to have, but I think, well, I think form and function working together makes good architecture. Mm. And if you're looking at bad architecture, it's probably because one is lacking, either form or function.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then personally, I think, and this is probably my take, but I think structurally, you shouldn't see the division between structure and architecture in a good building. Mm-hmm. Like structure should act as architectural elements,
agreed,
you know, when it needs to. And architecture should form some sort of structure when it needs to, or hide structure, or, you know what I mean?
So there needs to be a harmony between the two.
Absolutely. They should be so intertwined that you can't separate them.
The UCLA Master of Architecture program is situated in the UCLA School of the Arts and Architecture. I asked them both if they see themselves as artists.
I don't see myself. I think the closest I ever got to seeing myself as an artist was grad school at UCLA. Mm. And I think that's just because they push you to be so creative with very limited boundaries. You know, they really don't give you a budget. There's no code. You're just designing. And I think at that point for me, that's when I felt most like an artist. And then as soon as we graduated, I hate to say it, but I think it starts stripping away. You know, like you put a cost to something. Oh, you have code. Oh, life safety. There's things about architecture that pull you from that artist mentality. And I think if you can keep it, you know, that's what makes a good architect. But it's so easy to get distracted by kind of everyday things that pull you away from the artistry of it.
100%. I mean, it's funny. I think some of this is just our engineering background, architecture background,
that's good.
Right brain, left brain type thing. I actually feel like it depends on the day, for sure. But like most of the time, I would say that I do still feel like I am more on the artist's side.
Yeah.
And primarily because of like, for me, it's based on your perspective and like, it's like a way of thinking. Like the way, like for me, art isn't always necessarily like the creation of a thing. I think in conversation with people or communication with people, there's ways to creatively try to solve problems, or like it's a way of thinking. It's an approach to life. Like I think there's more to it. And like, I feel like it probably like as much as you may feel like you're not necessarily as much, I'm sure like in the day to day, like so many of the things that we went through in grad school, from like a critical problem-solving perspective or creative thinking perspective, has probably still influenced a lot of the things that you do and say, and even interacting with people, right? But it's like...
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. I'm just so technical these days.
I know. It's either this or
and
that.
And cynical, just technical.
You're maybe just a downer. I mean, I think structural engineering, you just have to be. There's really no...
Yeah.
We let you guys do all the art.
But I will say, I feel like there's a certain level of like optimism that artists come into most anything with, right? Like
that's a good point.
There's like a freedom to it. I think that's at the core of like when we meet with new clients or meet with new GCs or sub-consultants or whatever, like we're all in this industry to be able to do something together.
You got to sell the dream.
You got to sell the dream.
It's not built yet. Yeah. You got to sell it.
And like that stems from having the optimism. That stems from sort of like finding the right collaborators that share that dream.
Right.
Optimism
is a good word.
Aspiration.
Yeah.
That's
good. Katie and Dammy came to UCLA from very different backgrounds. Katie was born and raised in Southern California and studied engineering at UC San Diego. Dami was born in Nigeria and moved around extensively until finally settling in the United States.
When choosing a grad school, one of the biggest things people would tell me was, like, pick a city that you want to, like, live in afterwards. Mm-hmm. Because that's going to be more important than, like, sure, the experience of the school, like, yes, and the people you get exposed to. But, like, you need to want to be in that city because you're going to invest your time in getting to know, you know, not only the city through projects, but the people that are in there through professors. So you might as well pick somewhere that you want to live. So expectation-wise, like, yeah, I was like, oh, I want to get a job at Morphosis. Like, that was a dream, like, Tom Main, especially after going to see, like, the tour and seeing their office. Yeah. I was like, this is it. But then quickly, you know, reality sets in when you're exposed to so many different types of thinkers and, like, so many different types of scales of working and different types of projects throughout the whole core process, right? Like, solving different problems and different challenges with different people, giving you, like, new perspectives on how to, you know, how to formulate your own, you know, take on the profession.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think you and I were pretty opposite coming in to grad school. Like, you had just completed undergrad architecture, so you were just in that vein.
Rolling on.
Yeah. I was, like, totally making this, like, switch. I was just like, goodbye engineering, I'm going to just pursue this architecture, you know, endeavor. And so for me, coming in architecture at UCLA was like, everything was new and it was exciting. Like, the whole field to me was, like, fresh, you know. It was just, like, so I think I was taking, and then, but I lived in LA, so for the city, and that's also different. Like, you were brand new to the city.
You know,
that was my city. Yeah. So I think we came in so different, which is nice, you know.
It helped. I mean, I showed up and I was saying, like, Wilshire Boulevard. I remember, like, all the little things about, like, living in LA that I was very quickly
negated. The Dami you see now is not the Dami that stepped off the plane.
Into an Angelina 10 years later. Yeah.
So then to clarify, where did you grow up?
Oh, it's kind of a long
story.
I like to say that I grew up in Canada because that's where I spent the most amount of time prior to living in LA. But I was born in Nigeria, spent some time in Holland, 7 years in Canada, which was a magical time. Then moved to Texas for high school, so that was a whole culture shock, I would say. But luckily, the high school that I went to was one of the newer ones. I think I was part of, like, the third graduating class or something. So most of my friends had, you know, moved all around in the same vein. So I was very much so, like, surrounded by other people that didn't see the world similar to some of the Texans I was around. So it was,
but I think it
was pretty good, actually.
Interesting to think that, given your career choice, you had a bit of a world tour.
Yeah.
Did that inform anything in terms of your interests?
I mean, looking back on it, it'd be easy to say yes, but at the time, I would say it wasn't a big factor. I think, and Katie and I were just talking about this a little bit beforehand, like, there's something to moving around where you sort of just, like, get used to this nature of, like, not necessarily reinventing yourself, but adapting to your new climate and having to sort of find where you fit in and what your niche is. And, like, again, there's not really a through line through any of the places I lived culturally. So it was very much so, like, okay, let me, like, take a beat for a second and, like, try to, like, understand this context and then figure out, like, how I fit in here. And then 4 years later, it was like, all right, on to the next.
Katie and Dami took the time to recall some of the challenges and opportunities they were provided when beginning their studies at UCLA.
You guys all knew all the architects? Like, it's a very name game field where you have the architects and you're dropping names of buildings, you're dropping years they were built, who did the architect, you know, who did the architecture. And I had none of that. Like, I just felt like I had no back history to support this. And you guys were just, I had to play catch up for sure.
It's, like, super referential.
Right? Yeah. And it's just, and I think that's when it kind of hit me, like, this is an actual field where it's a huge history and that you should know it. Like, you know, you need to be
aware. And people are going to expect you to know it.
And people expect you to know it. To participate in the conversation, you need to know Mies van der Rohe, you know, or, like, what buildings he did, what style it was. You need to know. People expect you to know that. I thought that
was that a shorthand you then learned pretty quickly in the program?
Yeah. Yeah, I picked it up quick. I just remember our first design studio. We got, like, the brief of, like, hey, you're designing this building. And I remember turning to someone being like, what's the budget? What? And the person just started laughing. Because I just came in so new thinking, oh, we're just designing real-life buildings. But it's not true. You know, it's like,
there really is a distinction between
it's a design studio. Yeah, like, they really, and I, it's great. They just push, they take out all the distractions, and they just make you a better designer.
Yeah.
And so to clarify, with that brief, it's sky the limit.
Absolutely.
Think about anything.
Any material, it's sky's the limit.
I think every professor tries to, like, set what the guidelines are, what the framework is in their own way. But then, I mean, there are obviously, there are some studios you jump into and it really is like sky's the limit. Like we have, here's the problem. How are you going to solve it? And then you have 10 weeks to figure out what your solution or what your take on it is. I feel like the fact that Ohio State had the architecture program there in Knowlton School was very much so like theory and history coupled with design based. So there was a lot of time spent like going through, like you mentioned, like the classical stuff, the antiquity, like going through all these different eras, understanding how things progressed over time. And I think coming to UCLA, like the trajectory was always relatively clear. It's like you go to grad school, you get your degrees, you get licensed, you become an architect. That was always kind of like the goal. But what was like really refreshing about the sort of UCLA's take on it was the fact that people came in without background. Mm-hmm. So like rather than everybody coming in and being able to just reference like Pilates or whatever for no good reason, like people come in with engineering backgrounds or anthropology backgrounds or like chemical biology, like all kinds of different takes. And like the way that they interpret the task at hand or the things that we're reading about with like Sylvia Lavin's class, like, it's just the conversations were so much broader than I could have imagined because it wasn't just like drilling down on like getting more fine-grained into history, right? It was really looking forward as much as it was looking back.
And is it safe to say that in part of the benefit of this program is you're learning just as much from each other as you are for your professors?
Absolutely.
100%.
I asked Katie and Dami what makes a well-rounded architect. What ultimately impresses them?
I'm always impressed when somebody knows how something's built or if they can draw it to scale. Like, you know, the components. It's like everyone can draw a wall, but if you know, okay, there's a double top plate, you know, 2x4s with a rim joist, you know, there's nailing on the side. If they just show that conceptually well, like where it should be, I'm always, you should know how things are built, you know. To me, I think that makes a good architect is someone who knows how things are put together, not just kind of drawing lines on a paper and just like, okay, you build it. It's like
that fundamental
there's
knowledge.
There's a rational, yeah, a rationale to it, I think.
Yeah, I feel like mine's pretty similar, but I think I would describe it as more so like I'm impressed when someone has like a hyper keen ability to communicate their ideas, not only through like one medium. Mm-hmm. Like whenever I meet like a young designer and like they want to talk about like some idea that they want to put out there, if they have this great idea but they have no way of actually like getting anyone to like understand what they're thinking, whether it's through a diagram or 3D model or render, like if you can't communicate your ideas, you might as well not have them because it's at that point it's all internalized and no one can really share in this vision with you. But like that's what gets me super excited is when I can like understand somebody's like full understanding of why
also
they,
someone
why
who can sketch
it.
Well,
yeah,
you know, I think with computers nowadays maybe it's not as important people think, but if you're trying to get an idea across and you can pull up a napkin and just sketch something, I always think that's like such a good architect
move. That's funny. That's so funny. Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that, but I think of sketch in a much more like general sense. Like someone who can like the like napkin idea and convey it, sure, 100%. But someone who can very like not just as quickly, but like as quickly like model something up in like 30 minutes and be like, this is exactly
what
I was
thinking.
Yeah. Like I think sketching obviously like there's a value to being able to sort of create from your hands. But like I think I've started and this is like probably a more recent thing in the last couple of years of like sketching to me doesn't have to come from a pen to paper.
Okay.
Yeah. I think like because there's
I think
just
I'm more old school.
There's just people out in the industry these days
that
like
just do it.
They're so much faster at some and like in tools that I don't even know how to use. So it's just like I'm not going to limit their conveying of the ideas, but like that's partly why like the communication side. Like, it's really impressive when someone can like model something and have it not be like a photorealistic blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. Like you can model a diagram to get me to understand. Mm-hmm. The way that you're thinking about solving a problem. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Katie and Dami's discussion about sketching by hand versus digital mock-ups inspired me to ask how they have reacted to and adapted to rapidly changing technology. Think AI. Think 3D printing.
The first one that strikes me is model making by hand. For me, I just see that kind of going away. Or unless you're going to make a model for a client and it's going to be this object that everyone's going to look at.
Yeah.
But to actually work through ideas with your hands and paper or something, that's what we did at our first firm at Kevin Daly's. Mm-hmm. But ever since then, I just don't see it, you know, or you go to firms and sometimes they just don't have a model shop anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, usually it was standard. You had an architecture firm. In the back, there was a model shop with like a CNC table saw. And now it's sometimes just, you just don't, not at all. Maybe a 3D printer, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that's more of the vibe now. Is that would be an obvious one.
I mean, I feel like in looking at, like, the evolution of technology from, like, the early 90s, of, like, the introduction of CAD and, like, 3D modeling and that becoming more prolific and being taught in schools, and then you have a new generation of people coming up that, like, know all these tools mm-hmm. and know how to use them and start to sort of, not misuse, but, like, look at ways to, like, subvert, like, the use of some of these things. I feel like there was this rise in tech, and it was all about, like, oh, the computer can do everything. And I think it's always this sort of, like, sine wave mm-hmm. of, like, they're having the same conversation of, oh, computer's going to replace drafters. And to some extent, they did. But they didn't replace the drafters who learned how to use the computers.
Right.
So it's I think a part of it just has to do with, like, being aware of what's happening out there and then, like, finding a way to stay current. But what was interesting about our time at UCLA was, like, I think we were sort of at the tail end of this, like, let's call it, like a desire to return to the analog. Yep. Like I think back to, like, the tech core studios of, like, the years, like, right before, like, maybe, like, 2 or 3 years before, mm-hmm. like, when they were building full-scale wall mock-ups and, yep. like, inhabitable things you get to go around and see it. And then our year, it was like, yeah, you're building a mock-up, but it was just, like, a much smaller scale yeah. version of it. Yeah. So you don't get the same level of, like, tangible, like, oh, one-to-oneness and, like, relationship to it. So it's kind of like there's always this, like, nostalgia for the analog world.
And I think we had to fight for that model.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point. Is I think yeah. when we entered as freshmen, we saw what we would be doing, you know, as seniors. And there was this one, to give an example, there's one tech studio where you built a full 2-scale wall section. And I remember Damon and I were stoked, just looking forward mm-hmm. to this. So we get there, and in the span of 3 years in that program, by the time we got there, technology had moved so fast that not only did they nix the entire model, we actually had to ask them, can we build this? Like, we've seen it, you know, can we do it? And they were mm-hmm. like, no, it's not really needed anymore. You could mm-hmm. 3D print some sections. And yeah, we had to fight for that one.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. Yeah, the analog's really, it's kind of going out.
So I feel like we're, like, on this other side of it again. We're, like, you know, it's coming back. It's like this new, you know, 2024, we're in a completely new, like, era of design, I would say, like, with yeah. the introduction of the AI tools and things yeah. like that. Like, people are worried about this replacing that, but it's the same conversation people have always had. It's just going to be people armed with how to, like, use these tools yeah. to sort of further your own thought processes, critical thinking, whatever.
Yeah, like, adaption was always part of the process.
Right,
yeah. So adaption is just going to maintain that.
Right.
Ideally.
How have you adapted? You know, you've seen this change. Like, have you seen yourself professionally adapting to these changes?
On the model train, it's interesting. I feel like I totally agree with you. Like the lack of building models as a process tool is a little sad.
Yeah.
Because, like, I miss, like, figuring things out through the yeah. model. But, like, I feel like the professional world moves at a pace where it just isn't as feasible unless you make it, like, your mission. Like, we are going to solve this problem, like, through model building, which mm-hmm. a lot of firms do, and it's really valuable. But I would say in terms of, like, adapting the latest, like, for the AI specifically, like, we've been on it for a little bit now. Just obviously, like, seeing what's out there, trying to find ways of understanding it and finding ways to internalize it and sort of fold it into some of our workflows. We have this guy on at Rios, Bob Frederick. He's our director of computational everything development. Like, he like introduced Stable Diffusion really early on to have us, like, starting to test. Okay, like let's say I have an early schematic model, no details figured out yet, but I can start to generate AI renderings of this space to just pump out a bunch of conceptual ideas of, like, how we would, like, reimagine this, or how we'd reimagine this building, or in the context the building is in, and just, like, that's what I mean in terms of the sketch.
I see.
AI rendering, but I just see. Like, more so being super intentional about, like, exactly what you want to see before you start sort of testing all these ideas, so you can have, like, a much higher level conversation to get, like, okay, hey, let's flesh out these
yeah.
100 bad ideas first.
That's yeah, it's
and
quantity,
then focus in
I think.
On yeah.
AI comes in just doing iterative processes, but so much more and so much faster than we can get to. So yeah. you kind of just, it pumps it out and you go, yes, 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 no, no, no. So maybe, yeah, that's a good one.
I asked Katie and Dami to take me back to 2016, to their headspace with graduation around the corner.
I had a huge change. Because I came into architecture being like, okay, forget engineering, you know, just going to go with architecture. This is, you're a grad student, so you're always searching for what's your calling? Like, what are you going to do in life?
Yeah.
And I just was like, oh, architecture's it. honestly, by the time I was about to graduate, I had realized how intertwined, kind of going back to our first conversation, structure and architecture are, that they are so connected that being good at engineering was actually a huge plus. It actually helped me. I was trying to separate them all throughout undergrad and grad school, and then towards the end, I was like, you know what? It's better together. And so I just kind of relinquished. I started taking engineering classes at UCLA in my downtime as a senior of the grad program, just to kind of like bring it back, you know, like take what I learned from architecture school and just try to really like focus on just kind of connecting the two more. So I think that was my headspace, was just how do I incorporate everything now instead of constantly trying to separate these two fields? Like, let's just combine them and, you know, and I think that's where I was at.
And not to jump too far ahead, you did, because now you're principal at Offset. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And so where did you find, when did that click for you? Where like, that is kind of my superpower that I have.
Grad school.
So it was at grad school.
Yeah, because you start hearing about people talk about structural engineers as if they were this distant thing. Yeah. But I was like, no, that's me. And then the way people looked at me, knowing my background, it was almost they had to convince me that that was a valuable field. And so by the time it was an architect to convince me that that structural engineering was valuable, which is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you start to realize, oh, like, we do have a huge role in building. And, yeah.
And, I mean, honestly, I feel like if you hadn't stepped away from structural engineering, I don't know if you would have the same appreciation that you have for it now.
Absolutely.
Like, it took that critical distance to be like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think when I did graduate, I did work for an architecture firm for 2 years. To get licensed, because that was very important to me. Like, I just did this, and yeah, I should get my architecture license out of it before moving on to something else. And so I think that was my headspace, was like, you know, pursue architecture, but also make sure that you're always involving other fields, especially engineering. It was more of just like, come on, let's bring it all together, instead of just, when I entered UCLA, I was just like, separate, like, goodbye engineering, like, it's only architecture, and that was a big transformation for me, I think.
I mean, I feel like I was in a completely different
world.
Yeah, okay. That's funny. Yeah, well, okay, so, like, one of my main interests going into grad school was just, like, representation, trying to push the different ways of, like, how do we draw this thing, why do we draw, like, really drilling deep into that. But, like, by the time I was getting ready to graduate, I was just, like, hungry to build.
During grad school, Katie and Dami worked with UCLA professors and architects Kevin Daly and Dana Cuff on the Backyard Biome, a project from the UCLA Architecture and Urban Design Research Center, CityLab. CityLab has been instrumental in researching and developing projects to address the issues of housing insecurity and homelessness in Los Angeles.
We worked with Kevin Daly and Dana Cuff on the Backyard Biome, and like getting to actually like not only design but then build that thing full scale and figure out the complexities of like renting a tube bender, like figuring out like the doubly curved radiuses of these tubes and actually like making this thing happen.
I think that was the first time we actually built our design to scale.
A full scale thing. That was probably like the moment I was like, oh yeah, this is.
And that was, to clarify, that was a CityLab project, correct?
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. So what was the context, Panda? Give me the origin story of the Biome. Like, what was that?
It was a response to the housing crisis in LA, because this is early on when the ADU, which is an accessory dwelling unit, was like brand new. And this is, if you're not familiar, it's like the small house you can build in your backyard that LA is all about now, because they think it's going to solve housing crisis just by doubling, you know, the occupancy on a single family lot. And so that was very new concept. But then, of course, you have, well, not everyone can afford this. You know, like, I can't just afford to build a second house. So the Biome came around because it was the concept of affordable, accessible materials that you could order off the shelf. Mm-hmm. So nothing, I mean, we had a pipe bender. We bought pipes, literally tubes, and we had to bend them to certain radiuses, and then that's how the skeleton was formed. But the whole, the vision was that it's accessible, it's off the shelf, someone can go buy these things, do it themselves, and you can create like a habitable space with a kitchen and a bedroom. And and then when it was gone or done, you could just fold it up and recycle all the bits. It's very sustainable.
No foundations, no having to dig out. Just really trying to cut out a lot of those
very
like red tape things that had been holding them up for a long
time.
The CityLab had been doing so much research prior to the Biome that we built. Like, I think they had built a version 1.0 a couple years prior to. So like, there was a wealth of knowledge and research, and I think specific to like the policies around ADUs. And I think this was like a really good opportunity. I think the time was just very much so right that we could actually build this thing to start testing all these ideas about deployability, affordability, repeatability, and just actually like make the thing happen, which I when we finally did it, it actually made some waves.
It was
some
pretty awards. Cool. I mean, it was
a pretty cool thing to like be a part of that, like translated from policy, concept, design into like real built thing that we could build and then pack it up.
Yeah, exactly.
I asked Katie and Dami to share advice for aspiring architects and current students. They said it's important to try things on, to see the different perspectives shared by professors, other students, and even studios.
Just mold yourself into that for the quarter. I mean, because it's a quarter system, so it goes by quick. And for a couple months, you get to try on that design style.
It's honestly a luxury. Like, I feel like you're doing yourself a disservice to, like, fight against the spirit of whatever studio you're in. I think embracing that and finding a way to make it your own, all for it.
Yeah.
But I think
you got to try it on.
You got to understand where they're coming from and why this is the problem that they're bringing, and this why that's the sort of the framework they want to give you.
Yeah.
Before you can then go crazy,
right.
I think you have to understand
chose
the
that
context
framework for a reason.
Yeah.
It's about trying on and seeing what fits.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you at the end of it, you're like, this doesn't fit me, but I've learned something from it.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. It's almost more valuable when it doesn't fit, because you're like, oh, I'm not going to be doing that.
That's like my piece of advice, is to just like be a sponge. Like, as a student, and honestly, as a person in life, like, you have to understand that like there's something to be learned from almost every interaction in your life. Like, if you really spend the time to like go back and like rethink some of it, like some of the things that you never wanted to think about before, like, have shaped the way you react to certain other situations, but specifically at AUD, it's just like, not only are the students worth learning from, or the faculty worth learning from, there's just like random people you'll run into on campus that like, anytime you do build something and then a random passerby comes to see it, their reaction to it, like, is some. I mean, it's really interesting to note the little things that people pick up on, because then that can inform the next time you do something.
But I think time is like a key. When you're a student, you just have all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you can just dedicate all the time, and it's how much you want to put in. And it's like, if you have nothing else to do, like, someone, you were paying to be a student here for 3 years. Oh my gosh, you should give it all, your all. Danny
and everything.
I lived at studio.
Do everything.
It was Monday through Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday was like our free day.
That is something that's been echoed across the board, whether it's people in dance program, people in art program, which is, you showed up to do this thing,
right?
So do it.
So do the thing.
So do the thing.
Yes.
Like, you're, this is the time in your life to devote it.
This. Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
You've been listening to Works in Progress, a podcast from the UCLA School of the Arts and Architecture. You can find previous episodes on our website at podcast.arts.ucla.edu. I'm Sean Arenas. Thanks for listening, and take care.